Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Diana Deeney.
Oh, I guess this is my turn. This is Greg Hutchins. I hope I don't have dementia after this thing, right? It's like, where am I? Okay. No, I'm serious. All righty. I'm here, Diana. What do we want to talk about?
Well, we were just talking about the current status of things and people taking risk-based approaches to decide what to do about it. But we're talking about all the disruptions in the quality and reliability engineering field, what people should do about it. And well, we ended with be a boomer, not a doomer, right?
All righty. So am I supposed to start list things that we can become boomers on?
Yeah, that would be good. You had some ideas already, and I thought they were pretty intriguing. You want to share them?
So, what I'm doing to make money, especially engineers, they have a risk aversion to talking about money. You know, it's like, oh my God, you know, I just don't want to reveal. I don't want to disclose. And of course, you know, why? Because it's probably, from their point of view, a measure of self-worth. Well, nowadays, it's going to be self-preservation. If you don't do AI, you know, it's going to eat you up. That's sort of my message to myself. I should be in retirement mode, you know, and I'm working 80, 90-hour weeks. I hate doing it, but, you know, I see this opportunity.
Okay.
Where to start? If you're an engineer and you haven't touched it, take some of these AI courses that are for free. There are a lot of them around. A lot of them are very, very good. I would suggest starting with Eng. Eng was a guy who was one of the folks from Stanford who was sort of an early adopter of AI.
And that's spelled NG, right?
NG, exactly.
Right. Andrew, yes.
You know, Vietnamese dude. Very, very good. And he spent 20-some-odd years at Stanford, and the light flickered. And the light flickered in his head is, am I going to be an academic and be making a couple, 200-300 at Stanford? Or am I going to be a boomer and make, when I say 200-300K a year as a full professor? Or am I going to be an entrepreneur making 200-300 million a year? Duh, I mean, you know, that light flickered in his head, and he went out on his own, and he's doing classes in AI.
Oh, all right.
Yep. Excellent. I'd start with his free classes on how to rag, how to basically, you know, look at your profession, what to do next. And if you're interested, his classes are great. Now, I'll give you, here's a story, which as an engineer, it just irritates the shit of me.
Oh. But
true thing. He taught a class, one of the first classes he teaches, which is really a fundamental class in AI, in ML, machine learning, is to take a tool called gradient descent. And gradient descent essentially is the number one tool in machine learning. Now, to do gradient descent, you need to have 2 years of calculus, maybe 1 year of vector calculus. So you do it in three dimensions, right? You know how to differentiate and integrate.
Yeah, you're bringing back nightmares. But yes, okay.
Okay, but this is AI 2-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
2 years of calculus, diffie-q, 1 year of diffie-q differentials, 1 year of stat and probability, 1 year of linear, okay?
Yep.
That's the minimum. The tool that they use in ML is gradient descent. It's in triple integral, blah, 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 you know, with, you know, various type of parameters. So think of it as a shape, a 3-degree shape, and you want to find the optimal, think of it as a mount, right? 3D mountain, three space. Could be four space, but it's three space. And you want to find the quickest descent down the mountain. That's the best way to visualize that. Mm. That is the essence of machine learning. You need basically 3 years of math. This guy, Eng, N-G, teaches it visually and intuitively. Zero math. So I'm sitting there, and again, I'm doing engineer talk, okay? And I'm assuming that most of us are in the peer group of being engineers or have graduate or PhDs.
Yeah.
Eng teaches this fundamental concept of gradient descent intuitively. This is the future of all of our professions. It's intuitive. There are no barriers to entry.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And if there's no barriers to entry to becoming an engineer, what's your differentiator, your value-added differentiator? And if you can't tell me in 10 words or less, you're going to be functional toast. Hard message, but this guy Eng, you know, so here I am, I'm 2 years ago taking his classes. I love all this stuff, right? Triple integral, big long equation as long as my arm. You know, I have to program it in some type of silly language. And I'm getting my, you know, I'm enjoying this as an engineer. I'm geeking out.
Okay.
Uh-huh. That's on the table, you know. And then a year goes by and he's teaching this class and he's teaching it intuitively. And the way you're learning it is by pushing buttons in a computer, right? That take us this 3D image, right? You know, and basically, you know, moves it around and all the calculations are done on the computer. That's the future of every profession. Every knowledge domain profession, engineering, accounting, quality, reliability, that can be machined, can be done intuitively by anybody. That's it. That's the future. And that begs the question, what's our value add? And if we, in 10 words or less, can't communicate our value add, whether it's decision-making, being the person, and by the way, we can talk about decision-making for a couple minutes. If we can't communicate our value add, we're going to be functional toast.
Yeah, it's not so much all the things we know, but how we put it all together, right? How we link things together toward a narrative, but using the knowledge that we already have as engineers. Is that what you're getting at? Is that the knowledge that we have isn't the differentiator because now everybody has the same knowledge, but it's how we use it and make connections. And you mentioned communicate and making decisions.
I think the soft skills are going to be really important. How do we nuance? How do we basically get others basically to come on board? Now, in the work that I do, and this is what I'm working with right now, I got a proposal to a large customer to do human in the middle. Are you familiar with this, the human in the loop?
Yes.
Idea? Okay.
Well, do we need to talk about it a little bit just to give our listeners some context?
Absolutely. So here's the situation. We have a doctor, MD. This is a classic, again, who spent 10, 12 years educating himself, herself, has all types of knowledge. But he or she basically is great at diagnosing illnesses, even does maybe surgery. And then now we have the machine, AI machine. So the numbers are 75, the doctor would be 75, 80% reliable or accurate. I'm using your terms of reliability engineering, right?
Sure. Yeah. Appreciate
95%
it.
Confidence level, you know, 75 to 80% accurate. The machine comes along, is 99% accurate. Oh my God. The doctor all of a sudden lost their authority, their knowledge, right? Because the domain, whatever he or she was in, meaning a medical domain, has been co-opted by the machine. So what's the role of the doctor now? The role of the doctor now is going to be the human in the middle between the patient and the machine translating the machine in terms of the machine's accuracy, what it's saying, right? In terms of diagnosis or diagnosis to the human. Now, 6 months ago, a year ago, that would have been the human in the middle, translating the results of the machine to the human. Last 6 months, there have been studies that indicate that the machine now is more empathic or empathetic than the doctor.
Oh, no.
No, I'm serious. You can basically Google this. These are a bunch of studies coming out of, you know, New England School of Medicine or, you know, other schools, Harvard even, that say that the machine is more empathic than the human. And that begs the question, what's the role of the human in the middle?
Yeah. What did that article conclude? It just reported the study results and left everybody else hating.
I had to go to the doctor the other day for my yearly physical. And the doctor, you know, I had a conversation. She just graduated, so she was in her mid-30s. And she was worried. What's her role? What's her value add as a medical professional now? And we should ask that same question of quality reliability engineers. What's our role? What's our value add? Because the machines now are capable. I can give you other examples in terms of policing or having the machine have nuclear code access.
That just makes everybody uncomfortable.
Well, that's the reason why in the U.S., we do not trust the machine.
Mm-hmm.
In Asia, it's interesting. Our numbers are 32% of Americans trust the output of a machine in terms of fairness, explainability, equity, all that stuff. In Asia, it's up to 70%.
Huh.
Yep.
Less critical, huh?
I don't know. It's a cultural issue. But back to this thing, because we were going to talk about what can we do. The machine is coming. Hopefully not coming for your job, but we have to basically be ready to exploit the technology. Show me the money. Be a boomer. You know, play with the technology. Add value. Because there's going to be probably a 10 to 15 year hiatus or whatever you want to call it, delta, where a lot of people through tools are going to be making a lot of money. Agents, rags. You know, all types of machine tools that you can pick up for free on your computer.
Yeah. Yeah. In our household, there's an LM Studio, language model studio. So you can download an LLM that was trained on a specific data set for your own use on your home computer. And then you can tie it in with other things. So there's definitely a lot of capability. Sometimes with these new technologies, it's like it's so new that the only way you'd have access to it is if you worked for a big company that had it. But that's not necessarily the case with this technology. This technology seems to be available for anybody to play around with. And I find that's sometimes the best way that I learn is just to roll up my sleeves and dig in and try to push a few buttons and do a few things. And then just from doing that, I get some sense of what to use it for. But going back to your doctor example, where the computer is a lot more accurate and reliable at making diagnoses, as a doctor, if I were a doctor or as an engineer thinking about having that kind of data, to me that seems kind of exciting that I don't have to take some of the weight off, I guess. Maybe I wouldn't say that I'm shirking responsibility, but it's more like having like somebody else check what you think was true. And not necessarily just accepting it all the time that it's absolutely right. You still do verifications and checks and define that up front. But I think I would be more comfortable making decisions if I knew like the intern next to me was that accurate at evaluating the data. So I don't know. Do you think that's a special engineering quality reliability thing that Do you think most quality and reliability engineers might look at that as an awesome opportunity to be able to leverage instead of a threat?
Well, part of it is just simply repurposing or reconfiguring or jiggering our thinking and pivoting our thinking. You know, it's a framing issue. Is this a doomer or is this a boomer opportunity for us?
Oh, we're back to that, huh? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, like I said, I'm a one-trick pony. Here's a little game that I play with myself, but I do this in our classes. I visualize, or I ask people to visualize, who's the customer that's, you know, using our information, our data, our statistics? And here's the machine. And I'm in the middle between customer and machine. What can I do between the machine and the customer that adds value? Is it a Kappa? Is it a HALT? Is it a FEMA? Is it a reliability decision? You know, what can I do? Is it something that deals with escalation, verification, validation? What can I do as a professional between the machine and the customer that provides a different context, a different answer, a different way of looking at a problem, maybe a different type of solution, maybe the application of the solution? I don't know, but I try to put myself in the middle, and that's called the human in the loop.
Hmm.
And the human in the loop, well, as a matter of fact, one of our proposals that we're working on today, I'm looking at all the things that a human in the loop can do and offering solutions that our firm or myself can do on top of that. But it's just simply, it's a mental game. There's a machine, there's a customer, I'm a professional in the middle. What can I do? Can I interpret the decision of the machine? Can I overrule it? Should I escalate it? Should I define it? Should I translate it? What can I do that adds value?
And I think it's important, too, to note that a customer could be the end customer of your business, but it could also be an internal customer, like the manager asking you to make a decision on this data, or the quality person, the quality manager that needs to sign off on the lot. It could be lots of internal customers that you work with on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
So I think it would work for that too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's a great visual game that I do called it's called Human in the Loop. I call it sometimes Human in the Middle. What can I do with the data coming out of that machine that's different or value added to the customer?
So what are you seeing in the reliability and quality professions that would be that human in the middle? Is there particular roles that you see coming up because of the addition of these new tools, or is it mainly just that shift in thinking?
Right now, we're in the early part, meaning us as reliability quality engineers. We're still in the early part of that journey. We're still trying to figure out what are the machines, who are our customers, and how can we insert ourselves in that loop?
Mm.
So the first part is hearts and minds. There is something, there's a change going on. There is some uncertainty. How do I basically take that first step to basically adding value and inserting myself in the middle, you know, or somewhere in that loop to add value, to do something different? And then basically I start looking at options. Should I take classes? Should I basically come up with a rag? Should I basically come up with an agent? What can I do that would, again, just simply having a number isn't going to be good enough. I've got to be in that risk-based decision-making, risk-based problem-solving, risk-based communicating loop.
Mm-hmm. And I guess if you're in the middle looking at where I can add value, some of the big questions is with this new technology, and you're talking to that, like do I make an AI agent? Is this something I need to learn so I can better understand how it can help my customer?
Mm-hmm.
And then also looking the other direction toward your customer, is better defining who your customers are now, who they might be in the future. Maybe who might not be a customer anymore. Although I'm not sure how I say that, but maybe just a change, the change in the customer base based on all this disruption too. That's another thing to consider.
Another thing to look at, again, what we call a billion-dollar idea, is take your existing processes and say, how can I basically mechanize or automate these, you know, using this new technology? Because the technology is going to come sooner or later. And, you know, what we call proceduralizing, not in terms of workflows, you know, individual workflows, but using the machine, the software, to actually come up with a workflow, you know, define your critical control points, define the parameters, upper and bottom, you know, parameters, or what we would call safeguards, and then, you know, automating workflows. That's a big value add for any organization.
Yeah, and I think quality and reliability engineers, that's like the nuts and bolts line of thinking. Like, we're already trained for that. So
absolutely.
I think you can feel a little confident that, you know, you're meant to look at these kind of things, and that you're already have a leg up in training. It's just deciding how to apply it.
For quality reliability professionals, that's in our blood, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's, oh, that could be proceduralized, that could be processed, you know, that could be automated. And notice the thinking: documented, proceduralized, and then automated. This, for us, it's just a natural progression to add
that. So we started talking about in the last episode just all the disruptions. And now in this episode, You were talking about show me the money. What are we going to do about all these disruptions? And Greg and I were talking about Greg's idea about the human in the middle, looking back toward the technology, looking forward to customers, and deciding what you can do to connect them or differentiate yourself from them to add value, the value add. So if you're listening and you're thinking about this reliability, your reliability and quality engineer, and you've got the strengths, what are you doing to evaluate your customers, your internal customers too? And what are you doing to learn some of these new technologies? Are you taking some of the classes that Greg mentioned from Ing? Or are you more hands-on like I am and just trying to develop some things on your own? Let us know. You can visit AscendoReliability.com/SOR. You can leave us a comment. We love to hear from you. Greg and Fred and I and all the other people of Speaking Reliability, we're on Ascendo Reliability, and you can contact us through the links there. And we're all on LinkedIn too. So, Greg, any last thoughts for Show Me the Money?
So you're my boss. You know, I sit at the you know, on my bended knee to the expert, you know, hey, contact Diana for consulting and all the guru stuff, because she's going to be our next zillionaire.
Well, I have a different viewpoint to look at now, thanks to you.
Here I am working 80-hour weeks like a surf. So yeah, I see this as an opportunity. Absolutely. Show me the money.
Thanks, Greg.
Hey, it's been fun.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.